Well, 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 look who's back. Sorry, I'm going to be really tough to take for the next few days, at least, probably months, hopefully years, if all goes well. Lindsay Rhodes here, Trojan alum, wildly excited about the big news out of my alma mater this week, so much so that we're going to switch things up a bit on the NFL Roadshow today and focus on that bit of college football news. And I promise we're going to get back to the NFL on Wednesday and all of the takeaways from week 12. But I am more excited about the Lincoln Riley hiring than just about anything else right now in the world. And I think it has pretty far-reaching effects in the college football world. So I've reached out to a few friends to discuss what the USC coaching hire means for USC, for the Pac-12, for college football in general. We're going to hear from 8-year NFL defensive tackle Sean Cody from the Lions and Texans, who essentially launched the Pete Carroll era from a recruiting standpoint back in 2001, when he, as a heavily recruited 5-star lineman out of Los Altos High School in Hacienda Heights, took a leap of faith and committed to Pete Carroll and got that ball rolling. He now calls USC games on radio, so he's plugged in a bunch of different ways. We're going to talk to Matt Barkley, currently enjoying a bye week with the Panthers, nice enough to call in after landing at LAX. We're going to talk to Guy Haberman, the host of Pac-12 This Morning on SiriusXM Pac-12 Radio, and we're going to start with one of the preeminent college football reporting voices from Fox and The Athletic, and in a way, my son's baseball team. Let's welcome in Bruce Feldman to Break the Huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready? Ready.
All right, welcome now to Bruce Feldman, fellow White Knights baseball team parent with me. I'm excited to have you on the podcast since this is normally an NFL content podcast. I don't know. I didn't know if this was ever going to happen. And then all of a sudden, this one thing happened that could push me completely out of the NFL space, make this a completely college football related podcast for a day because it's all I care about. I was so distracted yesterday as I was on live television, Bruce, for 7 hours talking about NFL. I just kept bringing in, hey, did you guys hear that Lincoln Riley is going to be the USC head football? They were very annoyed with me.
I can only imagine. You're a big UCLA family, right? Half of it, huh?
My husband. But this is exactly what I've been waiting for, Bruce, so that I can get the kids on my side. This is all we need, is just like a good couple of years where USC is back, and then both of the kids will be back on my side. I'm counting on them being front runners.
It may work. I mean, I cannot remember I've lived out here almost 20 years. I cannot remember the last time USC pulled off something that everybody goes, wow, that right? was a great move. Like, it wasn't like this was before me when Pete Carroll got hired, but Pete was like the fifth choice. Nobody was like, that's a great move.
Yep. Wasn't that.
No. I mean, when I heard this come up, I was, we're in LA, so it was 9 a.m. my time, 11 a.m. Oklahoma time. And I got a call from somebody who would know, telling me Lincoln is strongly considering going to USC. And I think it's going to happen. I will call you back. And I was like processing in my head. I'm like, the only way Lincoln's going anywhere, because I had spent 2 weeks basically shooting down rumors that he was going to go to LSU. And so now I'm going to turn around a day later and say, yeah, I think he's going to end up at USC. And it just kind of, in the back of my head, I kept thinking, USC will screw this up. He won't go there. That's what I thought, because that's
Bruce, that's hurtful.
But you know what it's like. You went to the school, you followed them closely. There has always been things that the program or the university has bumbled its way into doing. And that's why I just didn't think they could pull off this hire. LSU was the one with the big AD who got, had once hired Chris Peterson away from Boise State and once hired Jimbo Fisher away from FSU and even Kim Mulkey away from Baylor. He's the guy who supposedly makes the wow hires, not USC. USC should be able to make them, but they almost never do.
Well, apparently Mike Bone is that guy who does.
Yeah, the powers of being a Manhattan Beach guy, right? So
what do you think it is about USC in the past that was not in play this time? Like, why did USC get out of its own way? What have those hurdles been in the past to making these kinds of big moves?
It's easy to say this one thing. It's like, I think some of it is just straight up bad judgment. But I think the other thing that I heard from the Lincoln Riley part of it was he was very impressed by the alignment within the administration. So I think that starts with Carol Folt, the relatively new president, and I think goes down to Mike Bone and them realizing you know what? If we really want to compete with the SEC and Ohio State and whoever else, we got to commit to it like that. I mean, look, think about it. And I don't have to sell this to you because obviously you grew up with USC. But like, you know, USC has more history than anybody. Never mind the quarterbacks. It's Ronnie Lott's school. It's Marcus's school. It's Anthony Munoz's school. It's Troy's school. You know, like that deal of it. You have so many players around here who grew up wanting to be Trojans. Like I remember Jim Mora beat USC his first 3 years in a row at UCLA. And there was a signing day. And I remember he lost like 5 of the 6 head to heads. And I remember talking to him. He was like, yeah, but you don't flip that overnight because most of these kids grow up wanting to be Trojans and their families all want to be Trojans because they all grew up that. That's what you're working against. But if you're at USC, you're different than every other, even you're different than the other blue bloods, right? Ohio State has Michigan, Alabama has Auburn and LSU and Texas A&M and Georgia. You know, nobody else is competing with USC on a level playing field in the Pac-12. They don't, you know, only UCLA is positioned geographically to have all the recruits right there in Southern California, but they don't, you know, they do not have the commitment or the resources to go after it the way USC does. And they finally swung for the fences and they were able to line up everything to make it work.
So how do you know how long USC had been working on this? Because they'd been looking for a coach for a couple of months. And this isn't even actually a name that I had really heard tossed around.
No, it wasn't, because who thought they were going to be able to pull this off, right? You know, so I mean, what I was told Sunday a couple hours after this was that this thing really picked up momentum late Saturday night and into the evening and into the morning. I find it hard to believe that this thing was pulled off, you know, within 12 hours for Lincoln Riley to move his young family and to basically flip everything in that much of a whim. I'm sure USC was laying groundwork to say, hey, we're going to do this. Now, I know that Matt Campbell, who's a really good coach at Iowa State, 3-time Big 12 Coach of the Year, you know, he was supposed to be meeting with USC Sunday. And so I think that probably escalated everything. Hey, we got to go. What do you want to do? And because I don't know how this would have played out if Lincoln Riley's team had won on Saturday night in Bedlam, a game they were winning, if they had won, could they have made that move? Because he couldn't have left. You know, this couldn't have unfolded like this with the Big 12 title coming up. So
we couldn't have left yet. USC could have dragged their feet.
USC absolutely could have dragged their feet. But do you drag your feet if you think, hey, we got Matt Campbell, he's probably a better coach than we've had here in a long time since Pete Carroll? Do we let that go? I don't know how that would have played out. I'm very curious. You know, that's a big what if, and for fate, for USC, fortunately, they don't have to know. They don't have to speculate on it.
That's an awkward call to Matt Campbell.
It is. No, my God. Yeah. I mean, but I think Matt Campbell understands if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be, and I'm going to be fine someplace else. So
why was this a good move for Lincoln Riley?
Well, I think go back to the part about you are set up to dominate the conference. You know, look, Oregon's recruiting really well. You got to compete with Mario Cristobal. Chip Kelly now has some momentum because they're 8-4. And I think, look, Chip Kelly was the no-brainer. Wow, this is going to work out great when he was hired at UCLA 4 years ago. It's taken a while. It may take Lincoln a while to get going because I just did a UCLA-USC game for Fox a week ago, and it was not even close. USC is nothing like the USC when you were around there, or even, you know, 10 years ago when the sanctions hit. I mean, they are really struggling. Now, the portal can help them, and I think there's a lot of other things that can get them up to speed. But I think the biggest appeal was, like, Oklahoma's going into the pack, going into the SEC in a couple of years. You're going up against Alabama. You're going up against LSU. You're going up against A&M, Georgia. I think Lincoln Riley knew, I've recruited out here, Southern California, really well. I mean, his class of 2023 was loaded for Oklahoma. Now, a bunch of those kids are already decommitting. He has ties. I know from him coming out here, having known him, and one of his, like, the new receivers coach, Dennis Simmons, is a guy I've known for like 20 years. Those guys are going to be out here. They've recruited out here a lot. And I know Lincoln has always been intrigued by the potential of USC and the power of the recruiting base here.
How many coaches do you think he is going to bring from Oklahoma? How much of of the staff will be filled out that way?
I would think it would be at least half the staff will be guys. I think his defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch, who did a really good job in the Pac-12 when he was Mike Leach's defensive coordinator at Washington State. I expect him to come. Dennis Simmons, I know, is coming. He's arguably as good a receivers coach as there is in the college football. I think there's some other support staffs coming. Like, there'll be a big piece if they can get Bill Biedenboe, who's his run game coordinator and offensive line coach. I think for people, and obviously USC had this with the air raid with Graham Harrell, for a lot of old USC people and not so old USC people were like, man, we don't like this air raid. That's not what we are. We're physical football. Like what Oklahoma had, even though Lincoln Riley has those air raid roots because of the run game stuff, they were really physical. And I think that would be a key piece if he can, you know, get Biedenboe, whose wife is from Oklahoma, but I still think, you know, it'd be hard to make that move without bringing, you know, your run game guy who's been so good and probably the best offensive line coach in the country. And that's an issue for USC because they've just had a revolving door at such a key position.
You mentioned the fact that USC was struggling and that UCLA game was ugly. And frankly, almost all of the games this year have been ugly. Are they struggling currently because of a lack of talent, a lack of development, talent usage? Like, what would you put your finger on why it's not hitting to the degree that it's not hitting? Because it feels like the recruiting has been fine. And this is, I mean, this goes back, this is a tale as old as time at USC. Like when I went there in the 90s, this was the case. We always had a top recruiting class and then it just didn't turn into anything. Our teams were awful. And then Pete came along and then Pete kind of changed it all. But the recruiting has always been fairly good, maybe not number one in the nation, but always pretty good. And at the top of the Pac-12, because of the reasons that you said, people want to come to USC and then it just doesn't go anywhere. And I've been a little bit confused about putting my finger on, obviously Clay wasn't the right coach, right? I think some of us knew that a few years ago. But I don't understand exactly why it's gotten so bad this year, even after he's been gone.
Well, I think it's kind of all of what you said is a part of it. I think I would start with this. So recruiting, I feel like some of those guys get overrated because they commit to USC. So then their stars get higher. It's kind of this weird self-fulfilling downward spiral. But I think it's as much the Monday through Friday issues of a lack of accountability and just a lack of discipline. You know, you watch this team and you've seen it over the years. You talk to coaches. It's a really sloppy team. And I think those issues kind of festered for a while, right? So you had Clay, who's by all accounts a really nice guy. But I think a lot of people, and I've talked to a lot of coaches who've worked there, who felt like he's kind of the substitute teacher. And so you had that kind of fester. And then I think getting to the recruiting part, what has really been the downward part, where I don't think that there's not as much talent as most people think there would assume there is now, because Clay Helton has been a lame duck head coach for 3 years. So because people are waiting for him to be fired, he's had some really underwhelming recruiting classes, one in particular. And so when that is like those, that group is like juniors and sophomores, those are guys you should be counting on to be really key contributors. And they're really not capable of doing that much. That sets you back. And then I think the fact that, like, I think they have some good assistants, but, you know, being around that program for a couple of days when they played UCLA, it struck me as there was a lot of guys who right now are independent contractors, meaning I think they don't know, you know, how long am I going to be here? They don't have much direction above them, not Dante Williams's fault as the interim, but I think that made it even worse. And so just they got through the season, or they're getting, I guess they saw the Cal game, but you're basically running out the string to get to 2022. And at least now there's a huge light at the end of the tunnel with Lincoln coming. It's just, he's going to have to hit the portal hard, and which is an opportunity. There's going to be a lot of guys already going in there. Spencer Rattler, I don't know if he wants him, is now in the portal as of, you know, today, and there's going to be a lot more, and it will be interesting to see how quickly he can get this thing flipped.
What is your best guess about what's realistic to expect in terms of how quickly this thing turns around?
Well, the advantage they have, Lindsay, is they're not in the SEC West here. I mean, if you look at it, Arizona was 1-11. They're really awful. Colorado's really bad. UCLA has gotten better, but it's not like UCLA has like an unbelievable roster. They're good, And I think they're well coached, but it's like, they're still not a top 10 team. Arizona State, Herm Edwards is probably going to come back, but they have a recruiting scandal that has gotten really ugly. And I think that's going to undermine them. So you basically have Utah, who's very good and they're physical, but I feel like every one in every 3 years, Utah's a top 15 team. And then the other 2 years are a fringe top 25. And then you get to the other side, you got Oregon is recruited well, but after that, Stanford has fallen apart, right? It's not like what it was under Jim Harbaugh, and David Shaw has struggled. You have Cal that's been really mediocre. You have Oregon State that is like slightly better than mediocre. You have Washington State that has played well, but I don't think they're any juggernaut. You have Washington now who is in disarray. You basically have only Oregon recruiting at a high level. So with that, it's like, can you beat Oregon, UCLA, and Utah? And it's, you know, even if USC does not have anywhere close to Alabama, Georgia talent, they should be close enough to be competitive with those teams to at least look at 8-4, 9-3, you know, pretty fast.
You know, it's funny. I remember from when I was covering USC during the Pete Carroll years, I remember going to other schools and I covered UCLA as frequently as I covered USC back then. And I would try to explain to people how just going from USC's practice to UCLA's practice at the time, there was such an obvious difference. And obviously UCLA still won some of those rivalry games, but I was like, they're not close. And I don't know how to communicate this to you. This isn't a bias. This is, you go and you watch these practices and the structure is there and the competition is there. And it just feels like the pace of play, all of it, you feel like you're at a practice, a very good team. And then you go to other practices and it just kind of feels slow and unstructured. And like, it might hit on Saturday, might not, but they're not even in the same ballpark as this other team. What about Lincoln and what he does with his team and the kind of structure that you've seen there at Oklahoma? Do you think that he will bring, how can he change that? What kinds of, you know, Pete has very specific things that I could point to with regards to his different days of the week and his philosophies and things like that. What does Lincoln bring to USC in that way?
That's a great point, because it's funny, being at UCLA USC game, I was with somebody else who was a football person who watched, who's a former player, watched UCLA stretch and get warmed up. And he was like, they look like an NFL team. And basically the answer was the other team looked kind of like a junior college team, not just the physical aspect, but how they operate. Right. And so what you're saying is 1,000% true. I think what Lincoln will do first and foremost, which is critical in the lack of what's been going on at USC for quite a while, is Lincoln Riley will give USC a very clear, defined identity, and he will give them a focus and an approach that has been lacking. And I think that is a really good starting point. You know, his strength coach, Benny Wiley, has been with him for a while. He's coming. I think you have a lot of guys who know what the expectation is. When I said to you a minute ago about like the assistants feel like there's kind of like all independent contractors, that's not a good thing. That's not their fault. But I feel like that's where USC has to get back to. And we'll see. It's been this way for a while. Like, I remember there's a former player I know who's an NFL coach who came back to USC practice, and he was almost disgusted by how he watched. And this is a couple of years ago, just seeing the lack of intensity, and just says like, you can't win this way. And it's unfortunate, but it really festered. And I keep using that word, festered, for a while, and it didn't fall apart overnight. And it's not going to get fixed overnight, but at least now there's a reason to say, okay, there's a switch that's going to get flipped, and let's see if you can warm it up.
And I think with USC, that's one of the biggest battles, right? Is just getting people back on board, getting the excitement, getting that hope and optimism, because like you said, you're going to be able to pull recruits to USC. You get the fans back, you get the people back in the stadium, you get the celebrities back on the sideline, you make it the big show in town. Lincoln can do that day one, literally today. USC is back in that department because people feel like there's reason to be excited about them. And a reason that I haven't felt excited about them for the last few years. So he wins that battle, and now we'll see what he can do from a pure football standpoint moving forward. Bruce, you're the best. Thank you so much for making time for me today.
Always fun talking football, Lindsay. I will see you around.
Up next, a couple people who share my enthusiasm today. Two USC football alums from either side of the ball. We've got former Texans and Lions defensive tackle Sean Cody, an All-American from USC, joining us in just a bit. First, though, back in LA, while the Panthers are on a bye, USC's all-time passing leader in yards and touchdowns, Matt Barkley. So good to see you, Matt, and especially under these circumstances. How are you feeling about your alma mater today?
I'm pumped up. I mean, I feel like the whole Trojan family is fired up. I think this, I've got former teammates. I've got teammates that played at Oklahoma texting me saying you got the greatest snag ever and how bummed they are. It's a great day to be a Trojan. I'll say that.
So I should point out to people who are listening and cannot see, you are like fully kitted out in SC gear. You just traveled across the country. Did you travel in head-to-toe SC?
No.
Oh, man, come on.
Around here, I'll wear cardinal and gold, but I like when I travel, I like to remain as incognito and low-key.
Okay,
I think, all black flying, yeah. But
you
now,
didn't want to like advertise like USC's all-time passing leader right here on the plane with you.
Not me. That's not me.
Yes.
But like you said, now at home, I am kitted out in cardinal and gold.
So, how did you find out? What was your reaction?
I actually had a teammate. So I played Sunday. We had a game down in Miami against the Dolphins. And post game in the locker room, I had a teammate say, dude, did you hear the news? And I didn't check my phone yet. And he goes, dude, Riley, it's either LSU or SC. What do you think? I'm like, I don't know. And then right when I checked my phone, it was like official ticker hit the headline that he's taking the SC job. So I found it in the locker room post game, kind of interesting, but
didn't see that one coming either.
Not at all.
Right. That wasn't even on the radar. Who did you think it was going to be?
It was funny. Cause I talked to Jack Del Rio. We played, the Redskins last week and I talked to Jack Del Rio for a while before the game and we were just kind of talking shop, state of affairs. And he was kind of saying he was interested to a certain extent, but also he loved where he was at. He was in a great position as a coordinator in Washington. But we were just kind of trying to check the dots and like figure out who it could be. A few different names got brought up, but I definitely didn't see Riley because I just thought it was such a good fit at Oklahoma. But I mean, that's the pull and the lure of being a head coach at SC.
I was thinking maybe like Bieniemy or something like that. They kept it so under wraps.
Yeah. Joe Barry's name got brought up.
That's an interesting one. Yeah.
When Franklin got off the list, it seemed like that list kept dwindling and dwindling. But I couldn't be more excited. I think it's a great fit.
Did anyone at the school ever reach out to you? I know that they were kind of talking to some alumni here and there. Did you have any conversations with anybody about what you thought it should be, what they should be looking for, anything like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I was a part of that conversation. Grateful that Mike Bone and Brandon kind of kept me involved. Just hearing feedback from what my time at USC was like and what I grew up, you know, watching USC win all those national championships, those Heisman winning players, and the tradition that I experienced at USC and what to expect in the future with the new hire. So I think they did their due diligence in reaching out to alumni. I don't know how extensive that list was, but I, for one, am grateful that they are taking that into account, you know, to get that feedback from former players.
Well, it's funny you bring up your time at USC specifically because you went through a coaching change while you were at USC. You had Pete Carroll for a year and then it was Lane Kiffin. So you can probably relate in some ways to what USC players have gone through this year in anticipation of this. And then what Oklahoma players are going through right now, having lost their coach. Now that you have some distance from your own experience, how would you describe that?
I remember being devastated when Sarkisian left for UW because he recruited me throughout high school. And I talked to him every week, my senior year of high school. And then right in, after that season in January, or what would have been late December, maybe, he took off. And I was just devastated, thinking like, this is the guy. Like, I just had no concept of football, pro football, and like what that's like with coaching changes. But then when Pete left and had a bunch of different experiences like that, but USC to me was so much bigger than any one person that I was going to see that through to the end. And, I think people need to realize that. And I think Coach Riley, he needs to bring that emphasis back to USC, and hopefully bring some recruits that he recruited to go to Oklahoma. And keep these Southern California kids in house because the brand name and what USC is and what it stands for, I think is so big that I never questioned leaving once.
What do you tell people about that Like, what does that even mean to you in terms of the brand name and all of the things that tied you to the school outside of Pete Carroll and that specific success that he was known for and brought to the table?
I think just a tradition of excellence, of winning, of pride in who you are.
It hasn't been there for so long, right?
I agree. And I think that needs to be brought to the forefront. And now I say that knowing that the landscape has also changed with how kids are recruited these days and the NIL stuff, and all social media has changed high school kids in so many ways from when I was being recruited. But at the same time, I didn't really have a normal recruiting route either, because I committed so early to USC because I wanted to go there. It was like the one and only. It was one shot for me, but it was the one place I wanted to be for a reason, because of what I'd watched growing up. And kids haven't seen that in the last couple of years, you know, of winning those games and those championships. But even, I mean, the Cardinal Gold, the jerseys, but and the Heisman trophies, everything about setting you up for success in the NFL. You know, people go to college to get a job post college, and in our case, athletes, you go to make it to the NFL. And I think promising that and being able to help young student athletes achieve that is important.
We talked to Bruce Feldman earlier, and he said that he had watched practices and games and talked to former USC players who had expressed frustration about the way that things had kind of gone in the last few years and how the team wasn't living up to the standards that they thought, you know, represented what USC should, that team should look like. What have you felt in the last few years? What would you like to see prioritized the most in terms of changing?
I feel like there was just a lack of identity, both on offense and defense, but really as a team of who we were. There was no established run game. I think every solid offense has a foundation in the run game. There were, you know, athletes here and there naturally being recruited to SC who were making plays, but no, you know, nastiness up front in the trenches where games are won, which was a staple for USC teams over the years when they were winning. And I think just going into every game, knowing that you are going to win with that mindset, that you practice harder than your opponent. Like when Pete was there and even Lane, like every day of practice going up against those players on my team who are the best recruits in the country, those practices were harder than most of the games that we faced, especially during Pete's heyday. Like those practices, I mean, you remember walking Will Ferrell, Snoop Dogg there, like it was a show. You wanted to perform, and it was Clay Matthews, Brian Cushing knocking guys out on the sideline. There was this vibe of energy that you didn't really see the last couple of years.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I just said that to Bruce when I was covering USC and UCLA, and I'd go back and forth, and not even just UCLA, but other teams too. And you could just tell there was such a big difference in terms of the way that teams practiced. And I was like, I can't articulate it to you because you're not allowed to just get up and go watch this. But it's like, you almost want to just be to the coaches, like what you're doing isn't working, because they practice so differently. And it was hard at the time to articulate. It's hard to even articulate now, but it was, like you said, it was just different. The practices were very, very different. And so I would imagine that that might be a good place to start. I do think that the energy that, you know, the energy from the excitement of the hiring is enough to carry them pretty far.
I'd hope so. I think recruiting too, you've already seen kids, I don't know the space well enough and the names of all these recruits, but I've seen headlines of guys already decommitting or kind of shifting gears back towards SC, which is a good sign. But again, I mentioned this earlier, but there's so much talent here in Southern California, and we've seen so many top recruits leave the state, go to the SEC, go to these other top schools where the best football is being played right now. I don't blame them to a certain degree, but being able to, again, establish that dominance at USC and keep those kids in house is going to be a task, but I think something that we can do and which will benefit us greatly. Yeah.
One of the things from a recruiting standpoint that I thought was very notable about you, You committed early, as you said, and then you actively recruited other players to come with you. Is it important, do you think, in this transition that they get that type of guy in the fold early?
I think so. And I do remember, Devon Kennard was one of the top kids in our class. Khalid Holmes, I played with that modern day. That was more of an easy pull. but at all these camps that I went to, the Nike camps, whatever they have now, Elite 11, just being almost a, kind of a spokesman for SC, even in high school, and wanting to play with the best players on my team, right? That's what I was doing. And I wanted guys to be able to experience USC the way I wanted to. And I don't know what that looks like in high school now, or whether it's these 7-on teams, that are winning national tournaments, or if it is the camps or whatever they do. But at least having that buzz around SC, because even in NFL locker rooms, it was kind of like trying to defend myself these whole last couple of years, right? Trying to make excuses or not placing bets because I know I was going to lose.
That's what I was going to ask you, because it's completely gone away. Like, it was, there was a time when that was a thing, when a USC person would say like, hey, we're playing your team today, let's get a friendly wager going on. And like, I would imagine now you're like, let's just pretend like that's not happening.
Not even $5 sometimes. It wasn't even worth it.
No.
But again, I don't know what top recruits are out there right now for USC. But having that buzz and being able to at least generate that desire to be at USC and getting guys talking, I think is definitely needed.
Well, there's one top recruit that plays running back that has five stars attached to his name, goes to your alma mater, Matt. So maybe you could work your recruiting magic again.
I've been talking to Rollo, and I'm letting them celebrate that national championship win over Servite just a little longer, and then I'll check back in with them. But losing Bryce Young, like, that was huge for him not to be at USC. But I get it. I mean, I wish him the best, and he's crushing it right now. But guys like that, like, I don't know. I'm biased, but they need to be at SC, right?
Question about the offense. So he is an air raid guy, Lincoln Riley. USC has a tradition, right? Like, that some of the alumni kind of like to see a certain style of play a little bit more. What do you think, what's your advice to USC fans about like where we should go offensively, what we should want to see from this offense moving forward?
I think Riley's going to do whatever it takes to win. And his bread and butter is the air raid. And I don't think it was run in its purest form the last couple of years. I know it has great potential. A QB that I was with in Buffalo, Davis Webb, is a Texas Tech product and a firm believer in the air raid. And we've had many conversations about if it works or not. And it definitely does. I've run concepts and versions of it in my past. I just think, again, that the biggest thing is that culture shift and just getting the best athletes. I think we're used to the ground and pound of old. And I also think, again, the high school landscape is changing, and a lot of kids are running this offense more. And a lot of NFL teams are running versions of this, whether it's not necessarily air raid, but, predominantly shotgun, predominantly passing game with different options on every route. It's definitely happening in the league. And so for the most part, colleges ran offenses to prepare guys, well, to win, but then, to set guys up for success in the NFL. And I think the air raid can do that, not only develop a strong passing game, but the run game off of that with the skill that we could have at running back. And so I think whatever he knows best, Riley's going to do, and we have to support that as a fan base. And I think it's going to work.
It's interesting because it feels like for a long time, USC was, sending a lot of quarterbacks to the league. And one of the things that USC had going for it during a window of time was that it was running a pro style offense. And then these quarterbacks, like, it felt like that could be a recruiting thing to bring you in, right? We're going to run the same type of offense you're going to run in the league. They're going to get a chance to evaluate you doing exactly what they are going to want you to do. And that was a pro, but it feels like you're saying, the NFL is changing so dramatically that isn't even anything that you necessarily have going for you in the same type of way. I'm wondering what the air raid how that changes things for a quarterback and the type of quarterback that you need. Like, what skill set makes a good air raid quarterback that might be different than, you know, like a more traditional offense that we've seen at USC?
Yeah, I think just having a quick release really helps and being able to see everything. You know, the mental capacity of a quarterback won't change depending on the offense. I think one thing to note in that offense compared to most NFL offenses is the huddling aspect and being able to command a huddle. Now, most teams do have like a turbo or a NASCAR package where they're up on the line of scrimmage going fast with one word plays or tempo signals or whatever it is. But if you're in the gun, looking over to the sideline every play for, you know, a play, and you're just giving signals to receivers, and you never grab the whole attention of the other 10 guys on the field, look them in the eyes while you're giving the plays, telling them what the whole 15 phrase concept is, right? That can be a tough transition for some QBs going into the league who have to remember audibles and checks and kills and opposites or whatever they're doing in the run game. So I think there has to be a good blend between being able to go fast, run your offense efficiently and do that, but then also command respect, spit out a play, you know, lead a huddle, lead a group of guys, not just kind of look over the side, get something to go. But you still have to be that field general in a sense, right? That that play caller in a traditional sense.
What do you think is a reasonable expectation for a turnaround time? Having gone through it, you know, some of the hard, right? Like, you know, what's harder than the rest of us on the outside actually think, and what can be done quickly with recruiting, you know, more than anyone too.
I think it's realistic that they can win the Pac-12 in 2 years. And I mean, I would hope it would be one and be next year.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little disappointed by that answer.
Give them a little wiggle room, but I think they do have the talent. I think they have players. I think a culture change is really is what's necessary. Coaching will be fine. Coaching will be great, but a culture change, and can that take exactly 9 months or whatever it is? Maybe. That's why I say 2 years, just because getting a new crop of guys in and letting that be established, I think, is important. But it can definitely be done soon. Yeah, sure. Why not? Maybe 1 year. Let's do it.
Okay, so what I'm hearing from you is that your primary takeaway is that you get to go into an NFL locker room and start betting on the Trojans again.
Yeah, that's I've already got a Washington State bet with teammates for next year. We're doing it. Beat the Cougars.
Matt, you're awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lindsay.
And since you brought up the nastiness in the trenches that is necessary to have success in college football, I think that that's a perfect way to bring in my next guest, who exhibited that in his time at USC. He was that for USC's defense, Sean Cody. All right. First of all, hi, Sean Cody. It's been a while.
Lindsay, it's been far too long. Oh my God. Last time I talked to you, maybe we were winning national championships. So hopefully we're back at it. Here we go.
I just hit pause on our relationship until we could win a national championship again. Like, we only talk when national championships are at stake. So I need to tell people who are listening, only in audio form, that you are fully decked out in SC gear with a huge smile on your face. We're back.
I got the old 84 on. I got SC, got my hat on. I don't know where my national championships rings are, but I'm trying to put everything on today. It's a glorious day, a glorious weekend, Lindsay. We are so fired up. I've talked to about a million people already. It's good to be back on the scene in college football.
Oh, okay. So let's go through the whole, like, you've talked to a lot of people. I'm sure it's been a whirlwind 24 hours. First up, how did you find out? What was your reaction initially?
Well, you know, I'm an insider, Lindsay, for USC football.
This is true. I know that. Yeah.
So I knew, right? No, I didn't know anything.
So they told you like a week ago that this was in the works and you kept it really low for all of, yeah.
No, I learned probably when you learned, I think Mike Bone and Brandon Sossen did a great job of keeping it under wraps and not letting anyone figure out what was going on. We were all speculating. We were talking to my little circles with players and USC people, and I just couldn't find anything out. Everyone wanted to know for me. I had no information. And then you find out and your jaw drops and you're just like, wow, those guys put it together. So all credit goes to Brandon Sosna and Mike Bone for really keeping us guessing and bringing Christmas early.
So what I'm hearing is that your friends think you're a pretty shitty USC insider, unable to provide them with any updates.
Yeah, I was digging too, man. I mean, people were giving me, I was digging. I was trying to find answers. People wanted stuff and I had nothing for them. And I was like, man, so then I started making stuff up and I was like, hey, I don't know, Pete's coming back. So I was just making stuff off the top, but obviously I'm excited. That was a great thing to do. And now we're moving forward in the Lincoln Riley era. And it, man, I'm just excited about the press conference today, excited about everything.
So a text chain amongst your fellow Trojans, your former teammates, what's been the reaction across the board? Who have you heard from?
I mean, it's just everywhere from everybody, from the guys I played with to guys who are playing now to everyone is just ecstatic about the hire. And I think they should be. I think the hype, the splash hire is exactly what USC needed. I don't think anything else would have made this kind of mark and kind of helped with on recruiting, helped on being relevant in the Los Angeles market, helped anything less than Lincoln Riley would have just been like, okay, SC did a good job. They hired a coach and now they're moving forward. But this has just been more than you can have expected. And I think it's just a great things ahead.
100%. Cause I've been sitting here kind of following from afar and thinking like none of the names that are coming up are exciting me. Like none of them check the box that is necessary. And you and I know USC alumni and kind of the general feeling around the program right now is just not excited. You needed that. You used the word splash hire. Splash hire is 100% what they needed because you can flip a switch where USC is concerned. And I think that this does that, right? Because it gets the base is excited. You fill up the Coliseum. It's like it's back before he does anything because you know he'll be able to recruit 100%. Whether he can win a game is another story, but I think he's proven that he can do that at Oklahoma. Why? What about him and his track record makes you feel like this is the right splash hire? Why is he the right coach for USC?
I think it has to do with what his accomplishments have already been. I think that's part of it. And I think some of it is in that the fact that he was even above most of our radars, right? It was a pick that was, we didn't even think it was possible. We were going down lists of guys. You thought of Aranda and Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell. And you were excited about these coaches, good coach. I was excited. And maybe we get a defensive guy, you know, and that's something that fired me up, but you know, so he was someone who was off the radar and just to have that name and then the initial, but what he's been able to do with Heisman Trophy and being in the conference, college football playoffs and at such a young age and the energy he has. And I've talked to some of my friends who I played in the NFL with from Oklahoma and just the words they've used to describe him and, you know, savant, offensive savant, and just a great organizer and an administrator and just all the things he's talked about. Everything's been glowing so far. So it's, I, you know, me, I try to find some dirt and dig in there, but it just nothing so far. It's just all thumbs up right now. And such a, I think such a good job by, like I said, I give enough credit to Mike Bone and Brandon Sosna for what they've done. Cause you know, they've been just getting a heckled by USC fans and me and you alike, I'm sure, just what's going on with the program. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? And slowly, but surely they've done a good job of just doing the right thing at this moment, doing the right thing in this moment. And here this, the climax of it all is just putting the cherry on top and seeing, you know, where the program's headed. So it's a good thing, Lindsay. I can tell, I don't know if you can tell, but I'm excited.
You're a little excited. I'm excited too. I think you'd be hard pressed to find a Trojan today that is not excited. You were, if I remember correctly, the first recruit of the Pete Carroll era, right? Were you not the first commit?
I think there was players committed before me, but I think the first player that committed after Pete got hired. Correct.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Of Pete.
Yeah.
So like, you were the first.
He signed on early. Yeah. Matt Leinart signed on early.
Like, well, the people who commit when they're like 10 don't count.
Yeah. I was a holdover. You know, I was just waiting to see who USC was going to hire. I was kind of, you know, looking around at other colleges and Ed Ogeron was kind of the guy that went from Hackett and we still keep recruiting me through the process till Pete was hired. And I would venture to say, and I don't know what Lincoln Riley's going to do, but I think Dante Williams can be kind of that guy that Ed Ogeron was, this kind of recruiting through the whole process and trying to keep guys in Southern California. And then when, you know, when Pete got the job, that's when I was like, hey, this all makes sense to me, a defensive guy. Ed Ogeron did a great job of recruiting me. Maybe that's for some of these recruits. That could be Dante Williams could be that glue guy to, you know, keep the USC momentum going while, you know, Lincoln Riley was hired.
Having been in that position then as a guy that was waiting kind of to see what the message was going to be, what do you think that this hire will do for recruiting?
Oh, it's already happening. It's already being, if you're watching, if you stay, I'm not so plugged into to recruiting what's going on. I like to just kind of concentrate on the team, but I mean, if you're watching social media at all, it's guys are, you know, these recruits are excited. They're, you know, flipping commitments already and talking about what could be at USC. And I think it's going to bring energy specifically to the Southern California base that USC has missed for so long. And you see players who are just, you know, having great college careers from Southern California and other places, and then just breaks your heart. You know, it's like, you know, us from Southern California here, it's just, why are these guys leaving? And we can't keep these guys here. And I think this hire, this splash move really kind of flips it on its head. It's like, hey, USC football is back. If you want to build, if you want to be something, part of something special in your backyard where you're from, do it right here at home. And I think that's what Lincoln Riley's got to preach.
Let me ask you this. So you're around the program a lot. You have been for the last few years. You were a part of the program when it was at its peak during the Pete Carroll years. What has been missing these last few years?
I think a lot of it comes down. It really, so many things, but I think a lot of it is accountability, really, when you look at what was happening and holding people in power. This is not just the players and accountability on the field, but I think people in positions of power at USC being accountable, being, you know, held responsible for what they were doing. And I think I think the whole after the Pete Carroll era, trying to rehash it and live it over and over again with these coaching hires and the athletic director hires and what was going on. And I think Carol Folt, who's the president now, who's got a lot, taken a lot of heat for a lot of stuff, but you know, she put Mike Bone in position to do his job and let him do his job. And now he's got this hire. So a lot of credit goes to Carol Folt as well for putting the right guy in the position. So I think, yeah, to me, it's been accountability. And I think that's what Carol Folt down to Mike Bone, down to Lincoln Riley now are going to be responsible for that accountability.
How far away is the roster from being competitive? Like, how quickly do you, as somebody who knows the roster very well, the depth chart, how quickly do you think that he can turn things around? What's a reasonable expectation?
I think with the talent on the team now, there's a good group of young core players that you can kind of build off. I think you're going to have to get into the portal a little bit, because I think where USC has struggled really is in the trenches. It's been in, you know, the offensive line and defensive line and getting those big bodies back in there. I think that with recruiting, you can get that going right away. You know, if some of these coaches you hired, you might have lost this recruiting this season, but now I think the 22 class is in play again. So you can kind of get those guys back on board and then moving forward with that. So realistically, to me, it's next year. You should be winning the South. You should be in the conference title game, and then 2 and 3. And I'm looking for college football playoffs in 2-3 years. Lindsay, let's go.
You know what's funny? We just talked to Bruce Feldman. He was talking about how some of the recruiting classes sometimes get overrated because once people commit to USC, then it almost like bumps up their status. I feel like just the general expectations, that's the case. The fact that USC was ranked at the beginning of this year and people, I was like, oh, we're not going to win that game. And people would be like, oh, but you're ranked. And I'm like, we're ranked because we're USC. Like it's an overestimation. That's not what this team is. So it's like, we're set up to fail every year. So I do think that what you bring up is interesting, because that compiled with the actual roster getting better so that it is competitive, you start at a point where you can actually climb into the playoff competition or conversation a lot faster, because they're overvaluing what's there. And then now what is actually there might actually be worth that valuation. It'll be interesting to see. Let's not wait another 10 years to catch up again.
Awesome. Let's do it, Lindsay. Come on. Come on, Lincoln.
What is up, everyone? It's Jeff Ratcliff, the host of the Rant Podcast. Join me weekdays for my unique brand of insight and analysis that will help you crush your fantasy football leagues and DFS contests. I'm also bringing you the sharpest betting angles, unique parlays, and the need-to-know info that helps put units in your pocket. The Rant, the fantasy football podcast that's on every winning lineup. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts or listen on the SXM app, free for most subscribers.
All right, now for a broader perspective, from a Pac-12 point of view, I want to welcome in Guy Haberman, who is the host of Pac-12 This Morning on SiriusXM Radio, Pac-12 Radio, I should say, from 7 to 10 a.m. Pacific. Also the co-host of the Haberman and Middlecoff podcast, works for Pac-12 Network. Guy, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for doing this.
Of course. I mean, who doesn't want to talk about Lincoln Riley to USC right now?
This girl raising her hand all over the place is somebody who does all day long. As do a lot of the USC alums that I've reached out to this morning that are like, yes, please. I do want to talk about that. You called this the biggest hire in the history of Pac-12 football.
Yeah. And I, you know, it was, I said it immediately and I said it on Twitter. So, of course I got called hyperbolic, which is fine. But I don't think it is. I think there's a conversation. I went through and did a quick sweep of, cause that was my first reaction, Lindsay. And I was like, okay, but I don't want to just say it without thinking about it. And somebody replied to me and said, what about Pop Warner?
Like, oh, okay. Goodness.
All right. Maybe in this Pop Warner. you know, John, when USC hired John Robinson the second time, he'd had a lot of success in the NFL. But what I mean by that, and I stand by it, and I'd be happy to, you know, if somebody hears this and says, well, here's a better option. What I mean by it, it's not what eventually happened, right? Like Pete Carroll turned into one of the great coaches in the history of the league.
But he was not a big hire at the time.
No, he was like, well, you tell me, if option number five is what people always say. Mm-hmm. In the moment when you hire the coach, I think Chris Peterson at Washington was viewed as a big hire because people had tried to, famously, he didn't really want to go to SC, right? Like he had had the conversation and I think everybody kind of agreed, yeah, you're not a match for us and we're not a match for you. I think they probably would have liked to hire him now, but that's one that's on the list. There are some really good hires that have been made. As it turns out, Kyle Whittingham was a fantastic hire at Utah. And I think SC had talked to him a few years ago and that conversation had come up. But I think in the moment, when you hire the guy that is going to tear the heart out of the place he leaves, when you hire the guy that, you know, he'd been asked the day before is, are you going to LSU? And he said, no.
By the way, he handled that like a G, because he just redirected it. Was like, I'm going to take this off the table. I'm going to shoot it down so hard and so specifically that you're not going to ask any follow-up questions, which are the right follow-up questions to ask.
Well, but isn't that a reflection of what people thought, that no one said, okay, but could he be going to USC? I give Mike Bone, the athletics director at USC, a ton of credit. And this now, if you're a USC alum like you, you can puff your chest out a little and go, okay, that whole debate about whether or not USC is a top three job or a top five job or whatever, that debate is over because Lincoln Riley just took the job and that validates the job. So, but I think it's very telling that no one was asking Lincoln Riley, are you about to go to USC? And I think part of that is the results that USC has had on the field. I think part of that is not quite knowing what Mike Bone would do, because under you know, in these circumstances in recent years, here's what USC hasn't done. USC has not hired somebody since Pete Carroll that might have said no when they offered them the job, right? With all due respect.
Do we know that? Because is it possible they've offered the job to people and it just never came out because they said no?
It's possible, but they haven't hired somebody.
Got it.
You know what I'm saying?
That, like, fits that description. Yes.
They haven't closed the deal. With You're somebody right. who doesn't need them.
You're right. They've all been safe hires.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that none of them could work. I mean, in hindsight, Lane is a really good coach. We'll see, you know, Sark's gotten his opportunity. I definitely understood why they hired Clay Helton. But I think since Pete Carroll, Pete Carroll had a lot of power at USC, probably more power than some people would have liked him to have had at the end. And I think what USC signaled by hiring Lincoln Riley is we as an institution are willing to give our football coach more power than any coach we've had since Pete, which is really important because, and again, you would know this better than me, There are a lot of people with a lot of opinions. What is like the board of directors, like 70 people? It's something ridiculous. So there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen. And so I give Mike Bowen a lot of credit for kind of taking the central position and then giving the power to somebody who's going to be able to say to him and going to be able to say to the boosters, here's what I need. And the answer better be YES in all caps with an exclamation point at the end, because I'm the guy with the leverage. And that's, you know, you have to give something up to hire somebody with that has leverage. And so I, in terms of just giving up some power, obviously, you got to give up some money too, but I give SC a lot of credit for that.
I saw somebody tweeted that USC, this signified that USC was committed to winning again. And my initial reaction was to yell back at the tweet and say, like, they were committed to winning the whole time. They just weren't doing it, right? Like, they didn't have the right people, they didn't have the right pieces. But then as I scaled back from that, I thought, maybe there is some truth to that in the sense that the last few years of Clay Helton's contract felt like we have to eat these years because financially, like, we just can't afford to be paying all of these different coaches. And then also the price of what the next coach will be. So I kind of wonder, do you think that for the last few years, clearly USC was hoping that things would go better, but do you think that there was a part of it that was actually financially driven? Like, we just can't make the move right now.
You're saying to hire a coach that's going to cost whatever Lincoln costs?
Yes, just because they clearly made a mistake by giving Clay Helton the contract extension that they did when they did. It shouldn't have happened. And I think a lot of us, you know, within the USC community were like, why? Why did that happen? And so then it felt a little bit like they were tied to it in a way that once it became pretty obvious that that had been the right move, that they couldn't just move on from it. They couldn't just cut their losses. You know what I mean? Do you think that that was part of it?
I think they were in such a weird spot because recruiting really suffered because his job was questioned. So then they gave him the extension and recruiting bounced back. But they were in this weird lame duck. I think the fact that Mike Bone was new complicated it, right? That there were all these, you had new people coming in, Carol Fault, you had all these new people coming in, and it's kind of an awkward spot. Like, because if I fire a coach immediately, now I'm on the clock because I have to hire a new coach immediately. And it's just real. I think they were in a really weird position. And I do think as weird as it all got, firing him during the year, I think they've now with hindsight, they pivoted. It's just a big boat to turn, right? You can't flip that thing, I don't think, like a speedboat. And they've actually, I think, have turned it pretty quickly. So I'm sure that was a consideration. Like, we're going to buy this guy out. And then we better be damn sure about the person we're about to pay. Because I think if you're going to fire a $4.5 million, $5 million coach, if you're going to say we're USC,
that
we're
going to step. That sounds quaint now, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's a one bedroom. You can't then, like, you better, if you're going to be, you better be ready to turn around and pay 10, because 7.5 or whatever, pay 8, whatever it's going to cost.
Yep.
If you're going to say, hey, this is the, we are firing Clay Helton and now we're moving forward in the direction that, you know, is required if you're going to be a CFP contender. So I do think the money, it had to be a part of it. But I also think back to your initial point about being all in on football, I think that's what I'm talking about too. When I say, are you hiring somebody with options? That's what all in means. I think it means you understand that when you look across the people that win, it's Lincoln and it's Nick and it's Dabo and, you know, now Georgia. Like, these are not places where they tell the head football coach, no, they're just not.
Do you know? So they've been conducting this coaching search for a couple of months now, and they've been doing it pretty quietly. I think, you know, there have been names that have been thrown out. But even when I talked to people that were part of the search committee, they would throw out like the same names that we were hearing, but they weren't saying anything, definitively, like, hey, we're going and talking to this person. It was just, it felt like they might even be reciting the same rumors that we were all hearing. Do you know how that search process went? Like, what were they doing this whole time? Had they isolated people that they wanted to go after? Were they swinging the big swings and having those conversations with people like Mike Tomlin, who would then, you know, slam the door in their face, which is, I think, what they should have done. I think, to your point, they should have called up everyone who would say no and put themselves out there. Go get this big guy who they ultimately got. But
yeah, I don't know. That'll be part of the, I'll be very interested to see what, I don't know how much Lincoln will illuminate. What I'm very interested in is, has this been happening for a couple weeks? Gabe Eichert over on Big 12 Radio, who played at Oklahoma as part of their radio crew, said Sunday that he'd heard from coaches that things had just gotten a little weird the last couple of weeks. And it made some people wonder, had he already taken a job? I have a hard time believing this just suddenly came together Saturday night. But I also know you're in a really tough spot if the coach you want to hire keeps winning, especially if the college football playoff is an option for him, because we're 2 weeks away from, the early signing period. You know, LSU has not hired a coach as we record this. Is that because the coach that they want is Dave Aranda and he's about to coach in the Big 12 title game? Is that because the coach they want is a coordinator or a coach for another team that's in the college football playoff race? Right. Like, Lincoln could not have taken this job if they'd beaten Oklahoma State on Saturday, I don't think, and still had the Big 12 title game ahead of them. So it feels to me like they've just been waiting for that moment. You're not rooting for the guy to lose, but in some sense, you can't have him make the college football playoff, because then what do you do? Yeah, you kind of are, right?
Yeah.
So it's really a weird spot to be in. And I wonder if you're Lincoln, if part of it is, look, you remember this from a few years ago when the 49ers hired John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. I think one of the things John Lynch said after the fact was, we made it clear to them, this can't leak, because you guys have had some leaks before. And it's kind of a test. Like, do not leak this. Don't leak that I'm about to come there. If you do, then I'm out. And I wonder if that was part of Lincoln's thing was, okay, we can talk about this. Or maybe his agent's thing was, but if this leaks, Lincoln's out. I have to, the idea that this thing came together Saturday night.
Do you think that we'll actually find that out? Because I wonder if it'll be like, if Lincoln will feel like he's admitting that he was cheating on his team that whole time, and he won't want that to come out because he doesn't want to hurt their feelings or something.
And Feldman wrote, it all came together very quickly Saturday night. Maybe that's a part of that. And Bruce is obviously very, very, connected on all those sorts of things. But that may not be something we know, because it's not something Lincoln would want. I give him credit. I mean, he spoke to the team. Not everybody does that. After the fact,
I actually feel bad for everyone associated with Oklahoma today. As excited as I am, this is awful. And especially in today's college football landscape with the transfer portal, and we're already seeing Oklahoma players entering that. I mean, it has the potential to decimate a program really quickly. On the flip side, it has a potential to just like flip a switch at USC. What kind of effect? So we were just looking before you came on, we were looking at the recruiting rankings according to 24/7, and USC's recruiting class at this moment is ranked 67th in the nation, which is comical to me. I feel like, and I haven't been close to college football really for a few years now, but I was like, oh yeah, top five, and
top five in the league.
Like, I don't know. Stop it. Come on, he can bring in the people before signing day to flip this around. I mean, top five might be a little bit extreme.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about, I was joking that SC had been top five in the Pac-12, and that's not good enough.
No, I'm talking about whether or not he can finish top five.
Yeah.
Now, like, can you flip this recruiting class? And I tend to think that he probably can, that he can go from like 67 to top five. Maybe top 10 is a little bit more realistic. What do you think is realistic from a recruiting standpoint this season?
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, Malachi Nelson, the five-star quarterback from, is it Los Altos High School?
Los Alamitos. Why is that? What? I saw that and I was like, that guy's going to Oklahoma? What are we doing?
Not anymore.
Which is, of course, has been the problem. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he decommitted. So, yes, Lincoln can. They've got, for a guy who's never been on the West Coast, he's recruited Southern California very well. He has coaches that were with him at Oklahoma that at least were on the jet with him that have been on the West Coast, that know, obviously Alex Grinch was on the West Coast as the defensive coordinator at Washington State, and then recruited nationally at Ohio State, and has continued that at Oklahoma. I don't know necessarily everybody that's coming with them, but Roy Manning, who was on his staff at Oklahoma, had been on the West Coast. Dennis Simmons, his outside receiver coach, had played at BYU. His offensive line coach, who was on the plane with him, had been the run game coordinator at Arizona. So yes, I think they can do it very quickly. I think it's a very interesting case study. We've had coaches obviously change jobs in the portal era. I haven't thought about this as we talk about this. If we had a coach go from such a high profile job to such a high profile job in the portal era, I don't know that we have. And, it used to be viewed that a transfer was a stopgap, But now when I say, and like the portal, the free transfer portal era, now you can get a guy that plays right away who might have two or three years of eligibility left. I think that's going to be really interesting, is how quickly can he get those guys that can contribute right away? Because I think what you said, I view that as a foregone conclusion. I think the recruiting immediately is going to flip. Every time a coach changes jobs from a smaller school to a bigger school, there's like six guys that come with them, right? Lance Leipold at Kansas, and there's six guys that come from Buffalo. Blake Anderson goes from Arkansas State to Utah State, and there's like six guys that come from Arkansas State. And on and on and on. It always happens. But what about like Oklahoma to USC? It's such a unique change at such a unique time. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how quickly he hits the portal, specifically with Oklahoma guys. It's wild, but I think he could flip it pretty quickly. Now, are they winning the Pac-12 next year? You know, I think specifically getting players in the trenches, because that's where Utah's very good. That's where Oregon's very good, offensive and defensive linemen. You know, those are the two teams playing in the Pac-12 title game on Friday. That'll be the skill guys, the quarterbacks, like they're coming. It's hard to get those types of guys right away to contribute offense. Like getting offensive linemen right away, really good ones, is hard. But I think he'll recruit them. The question is, can he portal those guys? If he can, then they've got a shot to win fast.
And then the thing is, too, how dirty it feels, right? Because you're now stealing from the program that you built up.
Yeah.
And they might be mad and feel like some of their friends are getting screwed or whatever. It's just I think that's a really tricky political situation, right? Like, we're going to find out how capable of finessing a bad situation.
Yeah,
he is.
That's a great word. I don't, because if you're an Oklahoma player left behind, maybe you want to stay at Oklahoma. Maybe it's not an issue. Maybe you're mad at him. You don't want to go with him. Maybe mm-hmm. you like him. You do want to go with him.
Do you think he started because he couldn't talk to any of them ahead of time. He couldn't like bring them into the fold. Like, hey, this is happening. You're my guy though. I want you to be in on this because I think this is something you can't do that while they're still playing football games like that.
You can't. I think a lot of times personal connections with assistant coaches are probably deeper than personal connections with head coaches. Right.
Good point.
Surprise me if a few guys come from Oklahoma to USC, like that's where bringing your offensive line coach, I would imagine, I'm just predicting and guessing here, but if it happens, it might be more related to a relationship with one of the position coaches than it is with a relationship directly with Lincoln. Right. If you see an offensive lineman come, it might be because of the offensive line coach. If you see a receiver come, it might be because of the receiver coach. Who's like, because sometimes those are the people that really recruit the individual, right? Not necessarily the head coach. Yeah. So it might be more related to those relationships than Lincoln's relationships.
What's the reaction around the Pac-12? I know you've got a lot of contacts around the conference.
I think people recognize it's really good for the league. TV contracts coming up at a time when the league needs to elevate itself, at a time when Oregon missed out on the college football playoff now, right? So it's a challenge for people. I think everybody has been able to take advantage of the fact that there's been an open door on Los Angeles. The problem is it's not just Pac-12 schools that have been taking advantage of it. It's been Oregon and then like everyone from the rest of the country. So I think people recognize like the league needs to keep those guys. Obviously, you want them on your team if you're at Washington State or if you're at Arizona. ASU is taking advantage of the fact that SC has not had a fence around LA. So from that standpoint, it makes it harder to get those players. But SC being good is good for everybody in the Pac-12. It means more money. It means more eyeballs, right? It means beating SC means something. Like, we got to get back. If you're Oregon State, you beat SC, and that's great because you haven't beat SC in LA since like 1966. But it doesn't actually do anything for you in the top 25. It doesn't help you.
That's so true.
So you got to get back to like beating SC matters, and not just to your parents.
Right.
Like to it matters. Like in the,
you need in the that rankings. Game on your schedule that will help your strength of schedule.
That's right.
Right. You go into every game, obviously, like even if it's hard, like, okay, we got to try to win this game. Well, this game has to, that's such a good point. It has to mean something.
You need that. They play Notre Dame every year, Lindsay. You need them to beat Notre Dame every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. I've been, so my husband went to, no, he's a UCLA fan. And
well, that was a quick segue right there.
I don't know why he has no ownership of them in the way that I do of USC, but whatever, he can continue to hate my school. So he's a UCLA fan, and you know, he's tried to talk trash to me this year about winning. I'm like, it's not working. I don't care.
You're not
because this is the lost year. Like, yay for you.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. It doesn't even matter to me. You know, it's done. Like, talk to me again when we're a program.
And that's the scary part is like people become apathetic about USC.
Yes. Yes. And USC fans are apathetic right now. This year they have been apathetic. And I think it's fair. I think it's fair. And my husband teases me and calls me a bandwagon fan. But I do think that people are busy. You know, lives are busy. And so in order to invest a lot of like emotion and time in an already busy schedule, this probably sounds really obnoxious, but I do think it's fair that you have a certain expectation that you're going to be competitive or meet a certain set of standards. Like the standards at USC are obnoxiously higher than other schools, right? They just are. If you're not going to be in it for the national championship, I don't care about winning a game here or there. I don't care. You can't make me excited about that. I have to know that you are, because I've been conditioned now to expect a certain thing. And if that thing is not happening, then none of the rest of it really matters that much to me.
I think I love the Pac-12. I think there's a lot of really good football here. I think the fans are great. I love being on the West Coast, but you can't deny that it matters more. It matters just as much on the West Coast when you're winning. And this applies to pro sports and to college sports, but when you're losing, it matters less to people. To like your casual fan, right? You fill a stadium on casual fans. Everybody has hardcore fans, and the hardcore fans get mad when you say that. But the casual fan is what fills a stadium. And there's more hardcore fans in other parts of the country that are going to the game no matter what. I've always referenced stadium sizes, and this is where USC comes back into play. In the Pac-12 and the other Power Four leagues, the median stadium size in the Pac is 53,000. In the SEC, it's 85. The average stadium size is 57,000, and it's 54 if you take UCLA out, because UCLA stadium's huge. If you just take the top half of the leagues, of every league, say, okay, every league's going to have a bottom half of the league always that isn't as good as you just need somebody's, everyone's got, you know, with all due respect, Vanderbilt somewhere, some way, somehow. Just by, because stadium size tells us how many people care. You don't build a big stadium if no one's coming to it. So in the top half of every league, number one, UCLA and USC, right? 91,000 and 78,000 seats. But we know 91,000 is not, like the Rose Bowl is outsized for UCLA. But you can't have SC 78,000 when there's 55 there with 23,000 empty seats. And 55, you know, in most places around this league, 55,000 people, half the league can't hold 55,000 people. Six of the 12 can't hold 55. Actually, ASU's 54 and Oregon's 54, so they can't hold 55 either. Maybe some standing room, right? If you look at the top half of the SEC, it's four schools with 100,000 seats. If you look at the top of the Big Ten, it's three schools with 100,000 seats. Texas has 100. But this place was built with 78,000 seats because when you're good, you fill 78,000. And that tells you what it can be. If you're good, but you gotta be good. I probably told your producer, Andrew Emmer, this. Mike Montgomery was the coach at Stanford and had some great basketball teams at Stanford, like some great teams at Stanford, like number one overall seed level good. And he always would joke, I've heard him tell this story many times that he'd be walking around, and Stanford's different animal than USC too. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they're the same, but people would come up to him and say, "Coach, how's the team?" And he'd say, "How's the team? We're ranked fifth. What do you mean, how's the team?" But that's just, it takes a lot. You've got to be really great to get attention. And USC has not only not been great, they haven't been really good. So I'm meandering a little bit here, but it's just, it is really apparent at a place like SC when you're not great, because the empty seats show themselves very clearly.
So you brought up the SEC, and some people are making this about him escaping the SEC, right? Do you think that there's anything to that?
I think there might be. Not escaping so much is just transitioning is, I don't think it's going to be easy. And the Big 12, there's been a clear path to the college football playoff, and he's taken it to his credit. But I think there's, I think that's definitely a part of it, is understanding that's going to be a bit of a challenge. I think maybe we all underestimated his ambition, or at least I did, because Bob Stoops had been there for whatever, 2 decades, and, you know, came back and put on the big cowboy hat on the Fox pregame 2 weeks ago and is going to be the interim head coach for the bowl game. And it's just, you know, we looked at that Oklahoma job and said, they're never going to fire you. You can have that job for 30 years, be really comfortable, and you're never going to have to worry about it. They're going to say yes to whatever you want. And, but maybe Lincoln felt like, I can't really win a national championship here. So I think it's the SEC part of it. I think that part of it, maybe that his dream was something a little bit bigger, and who knows? I mean, I was talking to a buddy of mine who coaches in the Big 12 a couple of days ago. I actually worked with his wife, so I knew his wife first. And we're just talking about the dynamics of this time of year, because the season ends Saturday, people start getting fired, people start getting hired. And it was a reminder. I wasn't even thinking about Lincoln at the time, but we were just talking about what she, like the things that matter to her. Right. And maybe Lincoln's wife wanted to go to LA. I don't know. That's entirely possible. All these things come into play here. But I think the SEC, that's a, absolutely a fair question. I think it might've been part of it, because if I'm him, I look at the Pac-12 and go, well, that place right there is ripe. And it's going to be the, when I go to the SEC, it's not going to be like the Big 12, but maybe I can go to the Pac-12, keep a lot of those players there, have a recruiting base that I don't have here in Norman, and maybe have a, I'm not going to, there's no easy path, because you're playing, you know, you're playing 9 conference games, all that. But yeah, I think that might've been a factor. It'd be the first time a coach has left because the team went to a better league, but.
Why do you think, if he would have felt this way, why do you think it would be harder to win a national championship at Oklahoma? Because it feels like they've had the guys, right? Like,
I think what they've lacked is the guys in the trenches. I've always, Nick Aliotti, who was the defensive coordinator for Chip Kelly at Oregon, has always said this. There's just not that many of those bodies. And for whatever reason, there's less of them on the West Coast. And we've had some of them leave the West Coast, obviously, and go to the Big Ten and go to the SEC. There's just less of those bodies. I don't know. I don't know what it is. So there's a finite number of guys that big, that talented, that athletic, that good. Penei Sewell, right, goes to Oregon. That's a big one. But there's not a ton of them. And you're right in the heart of all of them, kind of selling them the same thing at Oklahoma that the people around you were selling them, right? In terms of geography. LA, you can sell them something different than the other parts of the country are selling them. If they're from those other parts of the country, you say, come out here. If you're from LA, you say, stay here. If you're in Oklahoma, what are you selling that kid who's in LA? And that, not to say they didn't get good offensive linemen. Don't get me wrong. They've had a few. But, you know, I think that seems to be the thing that has been the holdup at Oklahoma. And so then,
like,
you
if
go
you're to, competing with an Alabama or those types of teams, what do you sell that is different that puts you over the top? You're
exactly
right.
If the kid's from Alabama, the kid's from Florida, he's like, well, all right, what now? I can sell him LA. That's a whole different sell. So I think that's a primary difference. I think that, you know, jumping into the SEC was going to be tough.
Well, will they be able to do all of the, like, the stuff at the Coliseum that existed when Pete Carroll was there, in terms of Snoop on the sideline and all the celebrities and building up that energy around the team? I know that went away because of sanctions and nobody was allowed to be near anybody and whatever. Now that we're far enough away from that, do you think that they could take that tact again?
I think so. You go back and look this year, I actually tweeted these photos today. I'd forgotten about it. During one of the off-season official visit days, Oklahoma brought out onto the field, they drove some of the nicest cars ever made, Rolls Royces and Lamborghinis and, like, cars. I'm not a car guy, so I don't even know. Somebody at Ferraris, and they lined them all up on the field, and they put their players who were visiting in Oklahoma uniforms and let them take pictures in front of all these cars. Now, if that's not superficial and flashy, like, I don't know what is. But I don't even think it was Lincoln's idea,
yeah.
But it showed an understanding of how to appeal to the guys that they're recruiting right now, and being willing to go, yeah, other people, you know, Lindsay, you and I are going to laugh at that,
yes.
But the 16 year old's going to eat it up. And so, yeah,
well, he needs Instagram content.
That's exactly what it is. Right. So, yeah, I mean, Snoop will be there for Lendale White to hand him the ball at the end of his touchdown run.
Oh my gosh, so great. You're bringing back so many good memories.
Wasn't that the story that that Lendale caught Snoop as Snoop was leaving, going up the tunnel, and gave him the football?
Oh, so good.
I mean, Reggie Bush being there with Fox, remember that? How great that was?
Yep.
Didn't he get a penalty? I think he got a penalty. Because one of the running backs ran up and hugged Reggie in the back of the end zone.
These are like the highlights of the last few years, so I should probably have that one more memorized.
But you know what's funny is, like, I've talked to players around the Pac-12 over the last few years. There was a running back a few years ago at Oregon State. He's on the Lions. He was a rookie this year named Jamar Jefferson from Southern California. There's a running back, a linebacker at Washington State named Jihad Woods. These guys grew up in Southern California. They are not old enough to remember Vince Young running through the end zone against SC in one of the greatest college football games.
Thank God, forget that part.
But they identify, Reggie Bush is the number one identifier for them. Now, Reggie's huge, but the USC has not replaced Reggie Bush as the face of the program. And Reggie hasn't been there in a long time. It's almost, we're coming up on, like, you know, we're not that far away from 20 years since Reggie played at SC.
Oh my God, don't do that.
I know.
That was just a couple years ago, guy.
That's right.
I think
yesterday.
You did your math wrong.
Reggie looks the same. But he's still, I think for a lot of people, Reggie's still the face of USC, which is cool.
Yeah.
But it tells you how long it's been. And I think in college football, unlike the NFL, the coaches are the faces of the sport, not the players. Because the coaches are the ones that, you know, are in the sport for a long time. The players, 3-4 years. And I think that's one of the significant things here for USC is maybe they finally have found a new face of the program that can garner the same type of attention that Reggie Bush has.
Well, I tell you what, we're talking right now a few hours prior to Lincoln Riley's press conference at USC, and I am very much looking forward to him talking about building a wall around LA. That's coming up 100%.
Yes.
And the happy tears from the USC alumni sitting in the audience, because it's back. And now I think I'm going to go drive around Manhattan Beach and look for USC flags, because I guarantee you that they're out.
You know, people win press conferences all the time. To win a press conference with a coach that has this much substance behind them is the only kind of winning that in the off season that really matters. You know, I'm sure as an alum, you probably already got the email from SC that tells you season tickets are going to be available in January.
And they'll be sold out.
And that's going to work. What really matters is winning football. I don't care. Winning football games will sell out a stadium if your coach is a mute. It doesn't matter. But it does matter at USC that you can do both. And this guy looks like he's primed to do both.
It's a chicken and the egg situation here. And I think 100% this part of it was necessary before the other part would come, because you need to keep people in the stands. You need to get people excited. That generates the recruiting interest, and then you can win because you have the right people.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Guy. Really, really appreciate this. This has been fun.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for letting me be a part of your,
my joy,
the eminence, the vibe that you're emanating today. Yes.
Are you as excited as I am now?
I actually am. Yes.
We're back.
Yeah, that's right. Trojans are back.
Suffice it to say, I am a little bit excited. If you are not a USC fan and you made it this far in the podcast, thanks so much for humoring me. And we will get back to the regularly scheduled NFL content on Wednesday, taking a look at the Patriots, who all of a sudden look legit, and also the Steelers, who could not have had a rougher Sunday. And I've got a lot of questions about what's going on there in Pittsburgh. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this episode and you want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app. Free for most subscribers. Just download it today and tap podcasts. For video clips of the show and more, follow me on Twitter, Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram, LindsayRhodesNFL. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is the aforementioned Andrew Emmer. Andy King is the director of sports podcasting for SiriusXM. And a special thanks to SiriusXM, senior vice president of sports programming and podcasting, Steve Cohen. We'll be back on Wednesday talking NFL. Hope to see you then.
SiriusXM Podcasts.